That was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year.
Trade henceforth must be with Asia. The Pacific is our ocean. More and more, Europe will manufacture all it needs, secure from its colonies the most it consumes. Where shall we turn for consumers of our surplus? Geography answers the question. China is our natural customer. The Philippines give us a door at the base of all the East. Most future wars will be conflicts of commerce. The power that rules the Pacific, therefore, is the power that rules the world. And with the Philippines, that power is and will forever be the American Republic. Be it resolved, Mr. President.
Thus did Indiana's 37-year-old Senator Albert J. Beveridge, recently returned from the scene of the American Army's campaign to squelch the Philippine insurrection, deliver his maiden speech in the U.S. Senate, January 9, 1900. What the fiery young Solon did not know, however, was that 34 years later, the Tidings McDuffie Act would be passed by both houses of the U.S. Congress, signed by the President, ratified by the Filipino legislature, providing that in 1945, that archipelago of more than 7,000 islands would throw off American control, become the Republic of the Philippines.
1900, that was the year.
Frankfort, Kentucky, January 30. Democratic contender for the governorship, William Goebel, walks toward the Capitol building with Colonel Jack Chin and Warden E. Lillard at approximately 11 a.m.
I tell you, Bill, we got these Republicans licked.
I hope so, Jack.
I know so. Why, there isn't a thing they can do now. Oh.
My God, E., get help.
Yeah.
Are you hurt, Goebel? Did they get you?
They got me this time. I guess they killed me.
Wounds diagnosed by attendant physicians as unquestionably fatal, William Goebel was administered the oath of office as governor of the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 9 p.m. the following evening. 3 days later, he died. Exactly 1 hour after his death had been announced, J.C.W. Beckham was receiving the oath of office.
The Commonwealth of Kentucky and the Constitution of the United States of America, so help you God.
I do. May God give me strength to do my duty.
Subsequently, Republican Secretary of State Caleb Powers was indicted with several others, tried for complicity, convicted and sentenced to jail. After serving 8 years, 3 months and 3 days, he was pardoned, elected to the U.S. Congress by his Mountaineer constituents to serve his district 4 terms, 1911 to 1919.
1900, that was the year.
Washington, D.C., April 30.
At 12:40 p.m. today, President McKinley signed the bill which gives the recently annexed Hawaiian Islands a territorial form of government similar to Alaska, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Arizona. The right of suffrage has been granted to all men speaking and writing the American or Hawaiian language.
1900.
After months of bitter fighting to retain her rights in South Africa against an insurrection of Boers under the leadership of President of the Transvaal Republic, Paul Kruger, Great Britain found herself undergoing an excruciating period of anxiety. Her regulars, Her citizen yeomanry, her volunteers, were bottled up by Boer forces in three strategic points: Kimberley, Lady Smith, and Mafeking.
February 15.
Lord Roberts advances upon Kimberley, relieves the British forces at that point.
February 27.
The British army in Ladysmith is relieved, but Colonel Baden-Powell and his forces are still waging an heroic defense of Mafeking. The British Empire breathlessly awaits news. Finally, on the late evening of Friday, May 18, Fleet Street, London.
Have you heard from your Joey, Meg?
No. He ain't written to me since he and Baden-Powell was cut off by them Boers. That's terrible, the suspense.
Yes, I know how you feel about it. I haven't had a word from my boy since he left London. And I'm right worried about him, I am.
Oh, well, there's nothing to do but the wife.
Listen, Meg.
Relieved. Baden-Powell's army relieved.
Hark! Do you hear what I hear?
No. No, it ain't possible.
Glory be! Mafeking is relieved. My joy is sighted.
The news of the historic relief of Mafeking meant victory for the British. The beginning of the decline of the Dutch Boers' insurgency in South Africa. The retention of Great Britain's power. Throughout the empire, crowds went mad with exultation. Statesmen viewed with dignified triumph the liberation of debonair Baden-Powell and his men. Said majority leader in the House of Commons, Arthur James Balfour,
"The only news I have is through the courtesy of the press. We have no information at the War Office, nor would we have as soon as it would arrive through other channels. I need hardly say that we all trust and have good reason to think it is probably true."
That was the year
that the initials TR began to brand themselves with the flame of accomplishment into the political consciousness of the world. On June 19 at Philadelphia, William McKinley was nominated for a second-term campaign for the presidency of the U.S. With his new running mate for the vice presidency, Theodore Roosevelt, hero of San Juan Hill and governor of the state of New York. November 6, McKinley and Roosevelt received 292 electoral votes, defeating their Democratic opponents, William Jennings Bryan and Adlai Ewing Stevenson.
That was the year, September 17.
By the terms of an act of the British Parliament, a proclamation was issued this day declaring that on and after January 1st, 1901, the people of New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, Queensland, Tasmania, and Western Australia shall be united in a federal commonwealth under the name of the Commonwealth of Australia.
And the 48-year-old struggle to establish a unified central government upon the world's largest island was won.
That was the year?
July 29, 1900. Monza, Italy. Affable, beloved Humbert I, King of Italy, acclaimed by his people Humbert the Good, soldier, benefactor, scrupulous adherent to constitutional principles of government, stands under the warm, glowing sun of this Lombardy resort town, awarding medals to the victors in the gymnastic competition.
There. My congratulations to you, young man. Italy is proud of you today. Proud of you all. Now, as I bid you farewell and return to Rome, I want you to know that it has given me great pleasure to be among my own people after so long an absence from Monza. Arrivederci!
Carriage is waiting, Your Majesty.
Thank you.
Smiling, saluting, the 56-year-old monarch steps lithely to his carriage when, from out the milling throng,
the king! The king is shot!
The intended victim of two previous attempts upon his life, Humbert I died almost instantly. The assassin was quickly apprehended, virtually snatched from the fury of the mob, hurried to jail.
Now, what is your name?
Angelo Bresci.
Where are you from?
I'm a native of Tuscany, but I have been living for some time in America. I know no one here.
Why did you do this? What is your reason? What have you to say to the Italian people?
Tell them I came from America on purpose to kill Umberto, and I have my reasons.
Tearfully, pitiably, Queen Margarita made her statement to her people.
It is the greatest crime of the century. Umberto was good and faithful. No person could have loved his people more. He was one who bore ill to no one.
A few days later, the mortal remains of Humbert
were laid to rest beside those of his father within the 2,000-year-old brick walls of the Church of Santa Maria Rotonda, the Roman Pantheon.
1900. That was the year.
From the myriad marquees of the theaters on Old Broadway, Thomas Alva Edison's bottles with hairpins inside blinked with such stellar names as Sarah Bernhardt and Camille, William H. Crane and David Harum, Maud Adams and the Little Minister, Henrietta Crossman and Mistress Nell, William Gillette and Sherlock Holmes, Nat Goodwin and Maxine Elliott in When We Were 21. Of course, it was the golden age of the American theater. And among musical shows which opened that year, one stands higher than all the rest in the number of performances. Floradora.
Then tell me, pretty maiden, what these very simple girlies do.
Kind sir, their manners are perfection, and the opposite of mine.
Then take a little walk with me, and then I can see what a most particular girl should be.
I've made of you too well to let you go, and flirt with those at home you know.
Well, no, fine little girl. You'll see, I only want but
now. Why, then, if you told them that you...
I won't care a thing for your sisters if you love me.
What would you say if I said I liked you well?
I bow to you.
On bended knee.
On bended knee.
If I love you. Would you tell me what I ought to do to keep you all mine alone? To always be true to me
if I love you.
Would it be a silly thing to do? For I love, love, love one.
Then why not me?
Yes, I
must love someone really, and it might as well.
Thank you.